Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Did you have a good weekend? I think I did. I think I had a good weekend. I'm pretty sure I did. I want to remind you very quickly, this Saturday night, AM 1090 in Seattle is having their fourth annual town hall meeting. Hope you're going to be there. You can get tickets by going to am1090seattle.com. And Stephanie Miller will be there. I'll be there. Tom Hartman, Bill Press, Ron Reagan. And it will all be moderated by the former Seattle Times chief political writer, David Postman. So looking forward to it. Friday night, we will not have a live program. I think Kathy's going to do a rebroadcast. That's a travel day. So I'm looking forward to seeing you Saturday night. If you haven't got your tickets yet, please do. I understand there's some good ones still left. So maybe we can get lucky and have a bunch of these people that are disrupting the town hall meetings, these screaming right-wing religious Christian Nazis who don't want health care and are shouting down people who are on recess right now, members of the House, who are trying to hold town hall meetings where people get information. And if you watch Keith Olbermann tonight or Rachel Maddow, even as we speak, there is video after video after video of these people. It's like the crowd that went down to interrupt the vote counting in Florida back in 2000. But if we're real lucky and people like that show up at the forum in Seattle, we will have a nice surprise. I will, anyway. I'll have a nice surprise for him. When did Brad substitute for me when he had the interview with Sybil Edmonds? Was that last week? When I was week before? When I, that's right. I was back last week. The week before when I really got hit by that germ warfare attack. Brad Friedman substituted for me from KTLK. And In Los Angeles. And a guest he had on was Sybil Edmonds. I'm sure you're all familiar with her. A former FBI agent who has been trying for 8 or 9 years now to get the truth out about an awful lot, mostly the setup for 9/11 that was put together by the Bush crime family. As a result of that interview that Brad conducted, I've been getting a series of emails from newspapers around the globe. The papers in Poland, India. Brad's here. Let's bring him on. Brad, what the hell did you talk about?
Hey, yeah, sorry about that, Mike.
No. I think it's wonderful. What I wanted to do was for those who missed it, just to get kind of a synopsis, if you can, about what you and Sybil talked about.
Well, actually, we talked about a number of things, and we opened up the phone lines so folks could ask her some questions because, as you know, she has been gagged. She's called, ACLU has described her as the most gagged woman in America. She has not been able to speak about what she heard firsthand as a translator in the FBI translation department after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And so piece by piece, some of that information is beginning to come out. I try to get it out of her whenever I talk to her. And in this case, it was actually a caller who had called in and asked the old question about whether she felt that 9/11 was an inside job. She was careful, as she always is, to try to reply, to basically be clear about what she knows firsthand versus what she might speculate about or what she's heard about from others and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, what she said, that at the time, actually, it sort of flew by me, and it took an expert in Sybil Edmonds, a fellow by the name of Luke Ryland, to put the pieces together. Essentially, what she said was that right up to 9/11, she knows for a fact that our government, or at least forces within our government, had, quote, intimate relations still with Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, leading right up to 9/11, particularly in Central Asia, and this very complicated web of the proxies and so forth. You'll recall the way the Taliban was used as a proxy against mm-hmm. against the USSR mm-hmm. Back during the Cold War. So it's akin to that sort of proxy war where our government was using Turkey, and they in turn were working with al-Qaeda, with Osama bin Laden, and the Taliban, in essence, to foment trouble in Central Asia, in the Xinjiang province of China. And that, by the way, seems to be how these Uyghurs got into the equation. Because, boy, when they showed up in Guantanamo, I thought, well, who the hell are the Uyghurs? Why
right.
are
we right.
you know, holding these guys?
Yeah, that was a question I had, too. Yeah,
yeah, and so they seem to be tied up. They were being trained by al-Qaeda, by the Taliban, to essentially foment trouble in that part of the world, Western China, and the stands, Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and so forth, to cause trouble and to basically, help further our military ambitions.
If I can interrupt, when you say trained by al-Qaeda and the Taliban, do you mean with the blessing or the funding of the U.S.?
That is certainly what it sounds like, yeah, with the folks who we work with very closely in Turkey. And, you know, Turkey for years, and Sibella Edmonds is of Turkish origin, and for years she has been talking about Turkey and the close ties that the Turkish lobby has with virtually every member of Congress, both Democratic and Republican, by the way, and that, you know, they have succeeded. They're still fighting over this this genocide in, what was it, 1910 or something.
The Armenian genocide?
The Armenian genocide.
Right.
They are still fighting. This is one of the most contentious topics, it seems, sometimes in Congress, on whether they can declare this a genocide, which happened 100 years ago. And every time they're about to do it, someone rides in and says, no, no, we can't do that, because our Turkish supporters will be ticked off by this, and they successfully seem to do it. So our ties are very, very close to Turkey, and the lobbying there, as Sibel describes it, is very similar to that to AIPAC and Israel's lobby.
Mm-hmm.
So the
mm-hmm.
Turkish-Israel lobby is incredibly strong, and apparently for good reason. We've got a lot of good friends in Turkey, and I put friends in quotes, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been, our proxies to work with Taliban, with al-Qaeda, with Osama bin Laden right up till 9/11, and essentially to stir up trouble in that region to further our empirical goals.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
When is it Sibel or Sibel?
Sibel.
Sibel Edmonds, when she refers or when she's asked whether or not it was an inside job, what is meant as literally as you can conclude, Brad? What is meant by the term inside job?
Well, my understanding, for those people who believe that 9/11 was an inside job, I suppose the most strident believe that, you know, it was pulled off by George Bush and Dick Cheney themselves, part of this PNAC conspiracy to create a Pearl Harbor to allow us to further all of the goals that, well, as it turns out, we eventually did, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I believe that's what's referred to most directly as inside job.
Mm-hmm.
Other people believe that it could still be an inside job, even if guys like George Bush and Dick Cheney did not necessarily know about it, but folks in our government, were able to either create this or allow it to happen. And that's the question that certainly that I get all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily have an opinion on it. I think I tend to share the same opinion that Sibel does, which is that clearly the government so screwed up, or covered up, if you will, the 9/11 Commission, the 9/11 investigation, that it's, you know, we are clearly going to have all of these questions until there is a legitimate investigation.
Brad, can you hold a second? All right, sure. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back. We're talking with Brad Friedman. Bradblog.com is his website. His interview with Sybil Edmonds week before last has, believe it or not, caused kind of an international stir. I've received a bunch of emails over the past, well, over this weekend, actually, giving me links to various newspapers around the globe that are talking about the interview he did with Sybil Edwards. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 21 past the hour. We're talking with Brad Friedman, who, when he substituted for me a little over a week ago, had as his guest Sybil Edmonds, who is a former translator for the FBI, and whose observations about the events leading up to 9/11, among other things, have been thoroughly silenced by the federal government. You know, I'm looking here, Brad, at the Times of India, quoting the interview, quoting Sybil Edmonds, and it's talking about her statement that the George Bush government had intimate relations with the Taliban, right, or with bin Laden right up to 9/11. It says these intimate relations included using bin Laden for operations in Central Asia, including Xinjiang, China. These operations involved using Al-Qaeda and Taliban in the same manner as we did during the quote, as we did during the Afghan and Soviet conflict, that is, fighting enemies as via proxies. If any of this is true, then I think it's very clear cut conclusion that A, bin Laden is alive and doing quite well, thank you, and B, under the protection of the United States government.
Well, it would certainly seem he was alive up until 9/11, and knowing what he seems to know, there would be a good reason to protect him, certainly, and, well, either kill him or protect him at this point, anything but bring him forward, which you notice they haven't. By the way, it wasn't the week before last. It was actually a few weeks before that when you all were on vacation that Sybil was on, but it took this long, actually, to sort of piece together some of these, connect some of these dots, which, as I said, Luke Ryland did so beautifully, and put together all of these pieces, because the information is there. It's a matter of collecting it. And as you notice, these headlines were all over, you know, international papers, as is usually the case when Sybil Edmonds speaks up.
And nothing here.
And nothing here at all.
Yeah.
So, it's amazing to see that. It's amazing to see the U.S. media simply look the other way, but we shouldn't be surprised. Spoke for 3.5 hours to the 9/11 Commission. Now, every single word of her testimony to the 9/11 Commission has been classified.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if she had nothing to tell here, if she had no credibility, and we've got, by the way, senators such as Chuck Grassley, Patrick Leahy, who have all gone on record saying that Sybil ought to be allowed to tell her story. So if she had no credibility here, it seems unlikely they would bother to classify every word of her 3.5 hours testimony, and wouldn't even allow her in her whistleblower court case to be in the courtroom when the government argued against her.
Mm-hmm.
She and her attorney were actually ordered to leave so they could give the reasons for their state's secrets claim here. Something is going on. Sybil has made very clear over the years that she's never really been able to tell the full story publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But the Times of London in the UK several months ago, is actually maybe a year ago now, picked up one huge piece of her story concerning the sale of black market nukes, again, going through Turkey to Pakistan and North Korea, Libya, and so on and so forth, where we had, once again, Americans, high officials in the American government, either participating or simply looking the other way. And the story that they broke in the Times of London was extraordinary. And yet, prior to that, when at Bradblog, she came out and said she would tell her story to any broadcast media who was willing to allow her to tell it, not a single one of them jumped in.
This story just keeps getting more and more astonishing. It would lead me to conclude regarding her testimony before the 9/11 Commission, since it's all been classified, and knowing what you know and other people know about things that she has been able to say, it would lead me to the conclusion that every single member of the 9/11 Commission then are accessories after the fact to activities that could very well be considered treason.
It sure seems that way, and not just the 9/11 folks, but as I say, the folks in Congress. You know, Denny Hastert, she has a Vanity Fair did this, I don't know, it was a 3,000, 5,000 word feature story on, again, another part of this concerning her allegations that Denny Hastert was heard as part of the targets of what she was listening to, what she was translated as taking money from Turkish interests, from Turkish drug dealers. And now, what do you know, where does Denny Hastert now work? He now represents, he lobbies for Turkey in the U.S. Congress, something $30,000 a month or something like that. You know, and she said, well, Brad, that's what I predicted a year ago, that he would end up working for Turkey. One piece of this, of her story after another keeps coming together, keeps being corroborated, and yet, where the hell is the U.S. media? Where the hell is the Congress? Where the hell is the 9/11 Commission investigating and or telling this story? Why aren't they?
Yeah, really. Hey, can you hold on again? You want to stick around just a little bit longer?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come back to Brad Friedman in a moment. You know what we're talking about. Go to his website, bradblog.com, and you'll get all the information here that you need. Plus, a transcript, plus over at Daily Coast, and I think Daily Coast has picked up on this now. The links are at Brad's website, so check it out, bradblog.com, regarding the Sybil Edmonds interview that he conducted a couple a few weeks ago on this program. Stick around. We'll continue this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm a rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a verse missing out of this song.
Misinformation.
Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
Wrong.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour on the Malloy program, we were talking with Brad Friedman, who
Mr. Blog.
Yeah, there you go. Whose website, bradblog.com, is one you should visit. What we're talking about is an interview that he conducted a couple of weeks ago while he was hosting this program with Sybil Edmonds, former FBI translator. And some of the things that she said in that interview have now wound up on the international press. I want to go back to the Times of India, and they write, Luke Ryland, a prolific investigator into the claim, said the tumultuous situation resulting from extremist operations would boost U.S. arms sales in the region, he's referring to the Central Asia, while forcing, quote, oil and gas concessions, end quote. And Press TV is reporting that. That's the Iranian organization, I believe. Isn't Press TV Iranian?
I'm not sure which one that is.
I think it is. It goes on to say the U.S. government has twice barred Edmonds' testimony on some controversial issues. She added on the program, these are the confirmed cases about which I have firsthand information. There are a lot of things that our government doesn't want us to know, end quote. What would happen if Sybil Edmonds refused to be throttled any longer and just called a press conference at the National Press Club and opened up? What would happen to her?
You know, I don't know. I've asked her about that, and there was a consideration of doing exactly that some time ago. You know, I think this is all rather exhausting to her and troubling, and she has tried to do it the right way. She's tried to go through Congress. She certainly testified to Congress. She's gone all the way up to the Supreme Court, who refused to hear her case, again, because of the state secrets privilege, mm-hmm. so-called state secrets privilege.
Now, this is being kept in place by the Obama administration, obviously.
Well, the use of the state secrets privilege is, I don't know if it has been tested in her case, if she is still bound by that state secrets privilege, or if she is literally able to talk at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she does talk as things come up, as she can corroborate information. I think part of this is she's gotten a lot of blowback where people say, okay, well, this is just one person. Where's her evidence? Well, of course, her evidence is in much of what she heard in the files of these investigations, FBI-targeted investigations that were going on. She's not going to be able to come out with the evidence. She is the evidence. But it takes others to corroborate her report and other media to do so. Unfortunately, it's been the foreign media, not the U.S. media in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Times of London was able to go out and corroborate with several other FBI agents the allegations that this Mark Grossman fellow, who was the second in command at the State Department under Bush, was in fact working with the Turks to leak our nuclear secrets to the black market.
Good God.
Good God indeed. The U.S. media, 60 Minutes, did cover her story some years ago, and that was it. And as far as follow-ups go, on this additional information that comes out, nary a word, just mm-hmm. crickets. But as I say, every time she opens her mouth, we hear on the front pages of papers in Turkey, Israel, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, everywhere but here, and yet we are at the very central nexus of this entire nightmare.
Another Indian newspaper, Zee News, says the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, has described Edmonds as, quote, the most gagged, end quote, woman in the history of the U.S. This is the part, and you've brought this up before too, Brad, as Sibel has. Gagged, why? Before you've knocked that out of the park, the information that she had came as a result of being an interpreter and being an FBI agent who had some inside knowledge. Certainly, Sibel has never made the claim, and I don't think anyone would make it for her, that she was aware of planning sessions or sessions wherein it was decided that any attack on the United States, no matter how much advance notice there was, that advance notice would be ignored. So what in the world could Sibel Edmonds have that makes the U.S. government insist on her silence?
A number of things. If, for example, we are, in fact, allowing nuclear secrets to leave our nuclear military bases here in the U.S. to go to guys like AQ Khan in Pakistan, allowing Pakistan to get the bomb. They, in turn, sell that technology, which apparently they have.
But how would she know that, being a translator?
She was a translator, not an interpreter. So she was a translator. So she was a part. And I think people don't really understand the importance of these translators because they are really listening in firsthand to these wiretaps.
I see.
As these folks are talking, these targets are talking about deals that they're making, payoffs, bribes, who it is. And she has, since she was not allowed to name names, so to speak, she has on her own website, justacitizen.com, put up what she calls Sibel Edmonds' Rogue Gallery. And she just posts a number of photographs of a number of public officials, U.S. Congressmen, State Department officials, lobbyists, both Republican and Democratic. And she doesn't say anything else about it, and she's let others sort of fill in the details about why those people are there. What she has told me is that many of these folks are absolutely directly compromised.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, they call it, she calls it hooking, that they basically, these spies, these bad guys, essentially will hook these congressmen with some piece of very incriminating information that makes them not want to move forward.
Sounds like Scientology.
Yes, there you go. The case in point was Henry Waxman, who for years had told her before the Democrats got the majority that, oh, if they got the majority, he would be head of the committee that would definitely look into this, have open hearings on it. She met with them in the SCIF. That's the sort of super secret. That's the cone of silence, if you will, inside Congress to share this classified information with Waxman and members of his staff. So she's given this information to them. But once the Democrats came into power in 2006, Waxman stopped speaking to her entirely. Why?
Yeah, why? Well, you know, I'm going to get 1,000 emails. What was her website again?
JustACitizen.com. That's where she talks about her case. She also has a new website, 123 Real Change, where she talks about additional information now on top of all of that. And she has taken the time to start going after the media for failing the country and all of that.
Numerals 123.
123 Real Change dot blogspot. .com.
Okay, realchange.blogspot.com. Okay. With a topic like this, with an interview like you conducted, I just don't know where to take the next question. I know, on your website, bradblog.com, you have links to, I think you have a link to the Daily Kos.
We do have a link to Luke Ryland's story, who really gives the details, linking, you know, to sort of all of these pieces, connecting these dots, who these players are, what they were trying to accomplish in Central Asia, and how it's, you know, and it's not far removed. It's not people we have never heard of. You know, it ties back, as I, you know, had mentioned, Denny Hastert, who's lobbying directly for the country of Turkey right now. Lobbying his old friends in Congress. These are people who are still there, who are still in power. Many of them are still in government. And, you know, again, one report after another, and this goes all the way back to 2002, the FBI's Inspector General's report, which was also classified, but a declassified version was released, in which the Inspector General of the FBI found her, quote, credible, serious, and her claims warranting a thorough and careful review by the FBI. Senator Grassley told 60 Minutes, absolutely she's credible, and the reason I feel she's credible is because people within the FBI have corroborated a lot of her story. Well, if all of these things have been corroborated over and over again, why is nothing being done? Is it because, in fact, people are so compromised, the people who would do something about it?
Or, Brad, we now have a government in place, and by that I mean essentially all three branches, that have a higher calling, a higher purpose that incorporates using people like bin Laden or whomever, using people like Saddam until they're no longer they're no longer valuable. I was thinking in a different context today about that attitude. It seems to me that most of our government, from literally from the White House all through just the entire government, the entire governing class in this country, really, I just ignore the things that are very upsetting to people who are paying attention. Can you hold on one more time?
Sure.
All right. They just seem to ignore everything and go about the business of pretending that they're running the country. I had this today as sort of an epiphanous moment, and it's very, very unsettling to me. It just all of a sudden. It came flashing into my brain. Nobody listens because nobody cares, because there's already the governing class has moved on. You and I are still back here arguing this stupid ass stuff like what happened on September 11th. They've moved way beyond that.
the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. If you're listening on the webcast on the internet, you get to hear off-the-air conversations between Kathy and me and Brad and me and so on and so forth. So to everybody who emailed in, Mike, you're live! No, just on the web. Brad, Jesse Richards from TV News Lies has phoned in. I'm going to try to conference you guys.
Sure.
I don't know if this will work, but let me just try. Oops, I guess I lost Brad. Jesse, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Yeah, I've got pretty primitive equipment. So when I took you, I lost Brad. But that's right. Brad will call back in. I don't know how we're going to connect you guys, but I know you've been covering this for years. And at 8 p.m. this Wednesday, you're going to have Wayne Madsen on. How will people be able to hear your interview?
Yeah, they can go to my website. There's a link to listen, or you can go right to monksmedia.com and click on Listen Live. But I gotta tell you, you know, I've been saying this for years and years and years, and finally, for the first time, I heard someone else say this, and this was Sybil Edmonds this week, where she said that Bin Laden was with us up until 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he opted out. I think he's saying, no, this is, I'm not playing this game. This is bad for my people. and we haven't seen him since.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I mean, I usually reserve that as my own, addition. That's my own calculation. I really don't have evidence.
So you're, oops, what happened here? Kathy, what happened to the call? All right, wait a second. Are you there?
I'm here, Jesse.
Okay, Jesse, I'm sorry. Something went screwy with the phones. So what you're suggesting is Bin Laden knew what the plan was, for 9/11, but decided, no, I'm not in, count me out, I'm taking my money.
I don't think so. I mean, Bin Laden's been a long time operative in many ways.
Right.
How dedicated his heart was, I don't know, because these guys, they calculate what's in it for them, what's in it for their people. They're movers and shakers. Clearly, 9/11 was not good for most of his causes in general.
Right.
And I am sure he said no. I mean, if you look at the interviews, at first he's acting, you know, there were a few words left out in translation. I was sitting with someone who spoke Arabic when they showed his first tape. And he's watching it like we're watching it. I didn't think the building was going to fall down. They say the Bin Laden group did it. He's watching it like a spectator and commenting it. And, of course, our media, you know, filled in the blanks.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, I mean, he's dropped out of the scene. He's not playing anymore. Now, I want to fill in another picture or fill in a few dots that are missing in the overall reality of what took place. There were a lot of official claims and official documented events that kind of contradict the conspiracy aspect of this, such as, oh, we were warned. And people say, oh, if we had all these warnings and we had the document that the Bush ignored, Bin Laden determined to attack, let me put into perspective what these warnings were. These warnings were the international community, the espionage community, and the insiders saying, look, we know what's going on. Your Bin Laden group is going live, whatever the Bin Laden operation is. They were not approving this. That's why the Bush administration was getting these official warnings. It's not like, oh, every 13 countries knew about this and we didn't know about it. No, everybody knew about it. And they were voicing their objection. They couldn't come out in public and say, hey, don't do this to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
They have to play along the game. So it's unfathomable to believe that we've had so many people look at this and see it coming, and we weren't aware of it.
Hey, Jesse, let me put you on hold for a second here. And I'm going to go back to Brad. Brad, we're just about out of time. Kathy, if you would you tell Jesse to hold on over the hour, and we'll talk to him at the start of the next hour. Brad, you've been listening there for a couple of minutes. I had Jesse Richards from TVNewsLies.org. He also is adding some very interesting elements into this story.
And unfortunately, I was barely able to hear him. It was way in the background, so you'll have to...
Not that again. Damn. All right. Let me just ask you this. We have just about a minute and a half left, and hopefully we're going to talk again this week because there's some other stuff I want to ask you. Remember that piece of audio... Benazir Bhutto, who was being interviewed by, who was the guy that interviewed Nixon, David Frost. And she said that, bin Laden, of course everyone knows bin Laden is dead. And it was shortly after that, of course, that, that she herself was, assassinated. And of course, I think it was Frost. David Frost didn't miss a beat. And kept right on going. Do you have any take? And I only have a minute here. Do you have any take on what the hell that was all about?
No, unfortunately, I don't. But it I think once again leads to, of course, that was not the U.S. media getting that information,
right.
And the U.S. media didn't do much with that information either.
Nothing, absolutely nothing.
Right. So, but they don't care. Clearly, they have moved on. Clearly, it's more important to give airtime to birthers and teabaggers than these issues. Apparently, these issues just don't matter. You know, there is no investigation. There's no investigation not only by the government. There's no investigation by the media either. So we're stuck with this guessing game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maddening. Seems to me it's dangerous. You talked about a higher purpose. Maybe there is a higher purpose for all of this. Maybe they actually are protecting us. But as Dan Ellsberg... said over the Brad blog, he called the Bell Edmonds story more explosive than the Pentagon Papers.
Well, a higher purpose, Brad. I mean, some kind of Christo-fascism.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah,
I don't mean to
our benefit. I mean to their benefit.
No, I'm saying, but we don't know, and that's what you get from the secrecy.
Yeah, Brad. Thank you. I'll be in touch this week. Maybe we can chat again. All right.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Take care. Jesse,
yes, sir.
If you can stick around after this break, we'll come back and chat a little bit longer. Can you do that?
Great, yeah, absolutely.
All right, thanks. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Don't miss a word. Just stay with us.
How many credit cards?
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. In spending the better part of the last hour talking with Brad Friedman, whose interview a couple of weeks ago, apparently with Sybelle Edmonds, has finally been picked up by the international press. It's kind of a natural segue into talking basically about the same issue with Jesse Richards, who is the... Jesse Richard, who is the editor-in-chief, I guess the way to put it, Jesse, of TVNewsLies.org. I wanted to ask you now, I know on Wednesday at 8 o'clock you are going to be talking with investigative reporter Wayne Madsen.
Yeah.
And I understand you're going to talk about the latest efforts by the National Security Agency to silence these leaks related to government involvement in the events of 9/11.
Yep.
Which leaks are you referring to? Are you referring specific?
There are a lot of people on the inside that I think basically were holding their breath until the Bush administration was out to see, you know, if something.
Hey Jesse, you're breaking up hideously. Do you have another phone? Or just move to away from the zapper rays that the government is shooting at you?
That could be. Is this better?
That's better.
Okay.
All right.
Let me put where I am here.
Well, I think what's been going on is you had a lot of people holding their breath until Bush was out of office to see what would start, you know, would anybody actually start establishing some justice. Now, the problem with whistleblowers from deep within is if you're privy to anything that's classified information, even if it's, you know, exposing crimes, even if you come out and say, hey, listen, these guys lied, these guys committed crimes, this and that, as long as the information that is evidentiary is classified, you can go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You lose your career anyway, but you can actually be arrested and, you know, disappeared with the current laws. The only way these guys can actually tell their story is if they're subpoenaed. And a lot of these guys, and I've heard this for years, have been waiting, just waiting to be subpoenaed.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can just get one district attorney in this country, in some little city somewhere, to open a civil case even, you could start hearing what's going on.
Well, this was the idea behind Vince Bugliosi's book to prosecute George W. Bush for murder. If one district attorney from a county where an American citizen had gone off to war and died based on the lies and deception, then Bush could be, and he lays it out in his book, Bush could be tried for murder. A listener to this program, Bob Alexander, raised some money through listener's effort and sent a copy of that book to 2,600 attorneys, state attorneys in various counties. They did all the research to match up dead American soldiers with the counties they were from and the prosecutors in those counties, sent out books to every single one of them. This is with Bugliosi's cooperation. And Bob told me a couple of weeks ago he's gotten one response of maybe next year. So this silence, this is the thing. If you could help me or the listeners understand why no one in this entire country seems to care a goddamn about getting to the truth. What, Jesse, what's up?
It's controlling reality. I mean, honestly, that's why people walk around and even in the back of their mind, they'll know someone like you is really the one that's got his grasp on reality versus what they're seeing around them. But, and you know, they're living in a surreal life. And unless everyone's, you know, it's the classical emperor's new clothes, you know, emperor with no clothes.
Right.
And you walk into a room, you know, you see the naked guy. You want to say there's a naked guy there. And what keeps you from saying it, even though you know it's there?
But
it's a psychological game.
Right. But I guess what I mean is, you know, we're a nation who, over the course of our history, and I don't see why it's any different now, we have hundreds of thousands, millions of people in this country who hate the idea of a government that lies, or hate the idea of fascism, or hate the idea of having the revolution of 232 years ago stolen from us. Why are all these people being quiet?
Well, here's what I'm thinking as far as the justice system. By the way, I had Brad Friedman on my show a few years back when I first was getting started, and we were talking about the election fraud that was taking place.
Right.
And, you know, my point then and my point now is, I think I've mentioned this to you, is, you know, why are we trying to address a criminal problem with political solutions here? You know, we have what's now this masterful design of the two-party system, basically controlling the body politic and the justice system in this country. And, you know, it's this, you know, we might be thinking that one is better than the other and there's a real ideology behind it, but clearly the two-party system is in place because it's easier to control two groups of people than, you know, the multitude of groups that this country would naturally fall into had we some real representation in a legitimate system.
Mm-hmm.
We've had other presidents who were not Republicans or Democrats in this country. I think what happens with the district attorneys, you know, what happens is the party, whoever the local party bosses are, the pressure comes from the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, not to go ahead with this stuff. Who appoints these guys? You know, these guys are appointed, or in some cases elected. It's a political system, and they're under the control of the body politic, and we have a corrupt political system in this country.
Do you believe, I agree that the political system is just absolutely rotten. Corrupt is one way to say it. Rotten is another. Insidious. Is there a chance, and this has to do with just a little moment inside my own head, is there a chance that the political class in this country, Democrats and Republicans, the people who really control the power in cohort, I guess is the right term, with the corporate class, that they are so moved on from all this stuff that people like you and Brad and I and other people are still back here talking about. Remember somebody in the Bush administration said, and I don't think this was just indicative of the Bush administration, we create our own reality. By the time you figure it out, we've moved on. We have a new reality. Is there a possibility that you and Greg Palast and Brad Friedman and all these people who have been trying like crazy people to pry the truth out, that this upper echelon, this combination of corporate political class, it just kind of laughs at you, laughs at me and says, you know, you guys go ahead and play with that. Go ahead and play with it.
That's why I don't feel threatened, by the way. I mean, I think, you know, no matter how loud or effective we are, you know, they pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right.
I'll tell you what I've been feeling lately, okay? Because I do this. I left a career to do this. I've just done this for no money since 2003. You know very well.
Yeah.
There's very little money in truth.
Yeah. Okay? No. Yeah. Very little.
Okay. You know, the capitalism system does not provide for the funding of true journalism.
Oh, hell no! Hell no!
So, the more I roam around and I travel and I walk down the street and I meet new people, the more I scratch my head and say, who am I trying to save? I mean, I meet people who are just complete,
right?
You know, I don't want to use negative terms, but I start questioning there's a few of us out here that seem to get it. Okay, why don't we just sit back and watch what happens to the rest of them?
Hey, hold on. Jesse, can you hold?
Sure.
All right, if you don't mind, and I want you to pick up on that when you come back. So hold on that that thought. I've got to do a break here. We're talking to Jesse Richard, who is the managing editor, I guess is the right word, of TVNewsLies.org website. He'll be interviewing Wayne Madsen this Wednesday at 8 p.m., and it's an interview you don't want to miss. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. We're talking with Jesse Richard, who is the managing editor at TVNewsLies.org and who does a radio program, a netcast. You should listen to this one, 8 p.m. Eastern Time this Wednesday. He'll be talking with investigative reporter Wayne Madsen about the latest efforts to silence leaks related to government involvement in the events of 9/11. That question, Jesse, right before we took the break, what's the point in these efforts? I mean, you kind of touched on it. You talk with people who just look at you like you're out of your mind.
Even the ones that don't.
you're fading again, pal. You're breaking.
Same location as I was. I don't know what to do here.
Well, they moved the zapper.
Who could be. Don't laugh, man.
Okay, there's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay. It's even the ones that sit and they, you know, and they understand what we're saying.
Ah, damn. Jesse, completely breaking up. Maybe you can get to a different room. Let's see. I think Jesse hung up, but maybe he'll call back in. Let's see if he'll call back in. His website, a lot of you are very familiar with it, tvnewslies.org. It is, if you want a good news roundup every day, that's a place to go. Trust me on that. And, he does this, a netcast radio show that, also is extremely interesting. There's a lot of so-called alternative or progressive or liberal or left-wing media out there. It's just that you have to scramble to try to find it. You know what I'm saying? It just sometimes seems so frustrating to constantly be unable to access the truth unless you are able to dig and probe and prod and talk to somebody who knows this website or that website. Okay, well, I got to go there. Well, no, wait a second. How about over here? This is madness. You know, I had another one of those moments today about the futility of all this and my role in this futility. It's just getting crazy. And I sometimes wonder, I think we started to touch on that, with Jesse, we started to touch on that, and I'm certain Brad has also talked about that. What is the point in, you know, in continuing to try to, ferret out the truth, dig out the truth, reveal some truth. What's the point? If everybody's moved on. I watched some videos of these crazy people who are disrupting the town hall meetings about healthcare. And it's madness. I mean, I would think that Barack Obama, of course I'm kidding here, Barack Obama would not do this. Mike Malloy would. Mike Malloy would just say, okay, call a press conference and say, okay, you stupid son of a bitches don't want it. Okay, we're walking away from it. Let's go back to murder and mayhem in Central Asia. I don't know. It's crazy. Jesse, you back now?
I hope so.
Okay. that idea of what's the point in the effort?
Yeah, you know, I look at people. I look at people who know what's going on. They understand. They listen to you. They realize something is dreadfully different than what they understand as far as what they're hearing on TV, and they're really looking for leadership. And to be honest with you, I think what's missing, to be truly honest with you,
mm-hmm.
Is for some brave people to finally make a decision and say, you know, working the system when the system is a controlled system is not going to change the system.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, we're at one of those points in history where we got to put the brakes on, and it's, you know, people don't want anything other than clean, nice, legal change.
Right. The system, in other words, the system cannot be reformed and it cannot be changed. And at that point, it's time to change the system. I don't mean change it, overthrow it. Because it won't respond anymore.
Well, I think what we have to start, I mean, my big fear, and sadly, if you look at how law enforcement in this country is, has been implemented, you know, first of all, with all due respect to law enforcement officials, in many, many cases, we're not dealing with exactly the most learned individuals.
Right.
They're very gung-ho, indoctrinated type, virtually military mentality. And, you know, if you look in the military, they're so indoctrinated. We don't know what even local law enforcement are being told on a daily minute-to-minute basis. They're being kind of brainwashed. They're tainted by what they do see with real crime and real problems.
I've been waiting for
And
Jesse, let me can you stick around for one more segment?
Sure.
All right, let me
sure.
put you on hold. We'll come back. We're talking with Jesse Richard, who's the managing editor at TVNewsLies.org. And I want to continue this discussion a little bit. You all know I do not have guests, but tonight with Brad and now Jesse, I think it's important. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Government lies to a people, and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where the...
Before the hour, welcome back. It seemed like a hell of a long break. We're talking with Jesse Richard from TVNewsLies.org. You were talking right before the break, Jesse, about law enforcement, the militarization of law enforcement in this country, and how that certainly, you didn't say this, but it has a noticeable chilling effect on just about anything that happens.
The thing is fear. You know, I live in New York. Let me tell you three interesting phenomena that I've noticed. Make it four. Downtown Manhattan, go down to Financial District. You have squads of police in military garb, in, M16s, just armed to the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You go down to either the Brooklyn waterfront or the Manhattan side between the Brooklyn Bridge and the Battery Tunnel. And several times a week you will see, and I filmed this, five or six twin-rotor Chinook helicopters, military helicopters with large transport helicopters just doing circles around the harbor in these big, intimidating, loud, scary machines. You have constant messages on the New York City subway. To be fearful, if you see any packages or suspicious anything, please report it. I mean, it's fear, and intimidation. And you also have law enforcement around the country have switched to black uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's this big, scary, fearful stormtrooper mentality. And what these guys don't understand is they're being groomed to look at the American people as the enemy. I mean, they don't understand what patriotism is. They don't understand anything about preserving the freedoms provided by the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
They are chain of command militants. And it's very hard to break these people of this mentality, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And I'm looking around and, you know, I'm saying if we don't start talking to our brothers, sisters, and children in local law enforcement, we're really setting ourselves up for a real potential domination in the short term rather than the long term, in my opinion.
Well, also is what I've been reading about extensively, what is happening in the U.S. military, the Christianization of the military. And I'm not talking about, you know, sitting down with your priest or your preacher before you go into combat. I'm talking about even back in the service academies, the Christianization, the holy war, the idea that Jesus Christ never did, if he did exist, never did put out a message of peace. He put out a message of a domination and war, and that thank God for Constantine, who wise people up to that. Because prior to that, Jesus was presented as a man of peace and love and turn the other cheek and so on and so forth. And that's not really the case. That's the message that's being inculcated into the warrior class or the military class in this country. And when that kind of Christianity, that kind of any, and it doesn't have to be, it can be Islam, it can be Judaism, it can be Hinduism, it doesn't make any difference. When that kind of religion, that toxic level of religion is pumped into the military, we got some problems.
Well, if you look, I mean, you and I, like, you know, probably the same religion. We both view organized religion pretty much the same way. But
right.
If you look at, you know, unfortunately, one common element of most of the organized religions is that they're very, very good at telling people or teaching people who to hate. You know, it's a very, very powerful control mechanism over mobs.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, again, like with the political mobs, you have two to control. Globally, it's a little more difficult. You have to have four or five major ones for the big population.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly a control mechanism. There's probably multiple interests. The big question is, where do people like you and me go to hide from all this? Do we meet at the end? What happens? Do we get an island at least out of this? Something.
I wish I knew. Jesse, listen, I'm gonna boogie. This interview you're doing Wednesday, it's at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and people just go to tvnewslies.org.
Yeah, on the front left side of the page, there's a radio show button. You can find all the instructions on there.
Okay.
They can download the podcast afterwards.
And an interview with Wayne Madsen is in the offing, right?
You bet.
Interesting. I don't think I've ever spoken to him, but I have certainly quoted his stuff on the air. So some of the stuff I've read in its entirety. Hey, thanks, Jesse. It's a real treat talking to you. I hope. Let me put you on hold because I'm going to have Kathy get your phone number so that we can get in touch and chat again. Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Jesse. I appreciate it. Ay, 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 ay. Real quick topic change here, quick enough to give you whiplash. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but there is something out on the internet now being promoted by the crazy sites, the usual crazy sites, Free Republic and, you know who they are. But it's supposed to be a birth certificate for Barack Obama from Kenya. He was born in 1961. The only problem is Kenya was not a country until 1963. But, that kind of stuff doesn't matter to these dumbasses that come up. Oh, look, we found the birth certificate. Look, here it is. Oh, my God. It says it comes from the office of the principal registrar, Coast Province, Republic of Kenya. And it records a birth from 1961 that in a country that didn't exist. It's just astonishing to me, on the one hand, how incredibly stupid, you know, the so many people on the right really are. These birthers are, I thought the teabaggers were crazy. And the names, you know, teabaggers, birthers, oh, my God. And now these people who are invading and disrupting the attempts by members of Congress to explain to people what the Obama health reform plan is all about. And these paid operatives who are being sent in deliberately by the Republican Party and ultimately, of course, by corporate America. They're being sent in to disrupt, as Oberman had on his program. You probably know this from, maybe Rachel Maddow's program. But there is a handbook that is going out on how to disrupt these meetings, the precise way to do it. This is so insane. The terrible part is so many of the cable chat television shows treat this as though it were legitimate, as though these were real, honest to God, concerned Americans who were disrupting these meetings with these asinine comments. I think Chris Matthews today on Hardball, I know, that's eighth or ninth time I've watched it in the past 2 weeks, but I think he was actually treating the video that he was showing as though it were legit. That these were Americans, as he put it, on the other side of the argument. What's the other side of the argument? People who don't want health insurance? Is that the other side? Okay. But that's insane. That's an insane point of view. And to give that argument parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y, parity, with the argument for some sort of change in the way health healthcare or sick care services are delivered in this country is absurd. There's no equal balance here. These are the same sons of bitches who invaded Palm Beach County and disrupted and scared the bejesus out of the vote counters who are trying to get a real fix on the election in 2000 before the Republican operatives destroyed it and the Supreme Court gave it to Bush. So this this movement, whatever it is, and a lot of it is tied into the Christian right, is truly evil. I mean, it is not a different political point of view. It's not a different take on a given subject. It is evil. Now, I've said a million times, I don't believe in good and evil. That assigns some sort of force value, and I just don't go there. I think people can be insane. To me, evil is insanity. That's all. It's a mental derangement. Hitler was insane, for example. Some people say he was evil. He was deranged. He was insane. Most of the mass killers in the history of the human race, as sad and brutal as it's been, have been people who were deranged. Just absolutely not sane. And that's the only thing I can come up with, is that the people doing this are completely deranged and are willing to work against their own interests. For what reason? That's the part that's kind of scary to me.
Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know?
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Hey, let me remind you again about this event coming up Saturday, coming in Seattle, sponsored by AM 1090, Seattle's AM 1090 radio station, our affiliate there. It is the fourth annual Town Hall Forum. And it will include Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Bill Press, Ron Reagan, and me, and moderated by David Postman, former chief political reporter for the Seattle Times. It's Saturday night. It begins, I think the doors open about 5 o'clock. The panel discussion is from 6 to 9. And there'll be an intermission, I'm sure. Usually these things are real hoot, so I hope you're going to be there. If you live anywhere in that area, or you find it convenient to hop on a train or a plane on the West Coast and come on up. Would love to have you attend this. And you can get ticket information. Go to AM 1090 Seattle, AM1090Seattle.com. That's this Saturday night. In the Telegraph of the UK newspaper, in today's edition, it says U.S. President Barack Obama is the target of more than 30 death threats a day, 30, and is being protected by an increasingly overstretched and under-resourced Secret Service. That's according to a new book. The article says the rate of threats against the president has increased 400%. 400%. That's according to Ron Kessler, author of In the President's Secret Service, a new book. Some of the threats to Obama have been publicized, including an alleged plot by white supremacists in Tennessee late last year to rob a gun store, shoot 88 black people, decapitate another 14, and then assassinate the first black president in American history. That one was made public, although, by God, that's the first time I heard of that one. Most, according to the article in the Telegraph, are kept under wraps because the Secret Service fears that revealing details of them would only increase the number of copycat attempts. Each one of these threats has to be investigated meticulously. Now, the problem here is that the Secret Service is being stretched thin. They're running out of people to handle this, and which I find to be insane. You know, once again, that's horse crap. If necessary, to protect the commander in chief at a time of war, surround him with a military unit, or not military to do law enforcement in the United States, but military to protect their commander in chief, no matter where he is, if he's in the United States or in Russia. I think it's coming to the point where they, and though that would be this cabal of people who really run the country, the political class, the corporate class, I think they're starting to consider whether or not Barack Obama is better off to them dead or alive. I really do. I really, really, really do. The book talks about the loopholes in Obama's security. And you know that has to be deliberate. The author describes how more than 100 VIPs and major campaign donors were screened by metal detectors before coming near the president, but then walked along a public pavement before boarding so-called secure buses, and they weren't checked again. It would have been very simple for an assassin to have mingled with them in order to get close enough to shoot the new president. It goes on and on and on. A Secret Service agent told the author, quote, "We have half the number of agents we need, but requests for more agents have fallen on deaf ears at headquarters." The headquarters mentality has always been, according to this guy, you can complete the mission with what you have. You're a U.S. Secret Service agent. For example, according to this article, the Secret Service has increasingly cut corners after it was absorbed by the new Homeland Security Department. Did you know that? Under George Bush, the author said that when Joe Biden threw the first pitch at the Baltimore Orioles game of the 2009 season, the Secret Service did not screen any of the more than 40,000 fans, which stunned Biden's agents and the local Secret Service field office. And remember during the campaign, that story out of Dallas of all places, where Obama was giving a campaign speech, and the Secret Service and the local police were ordered to stand down, to just stand back. There were no armed cops or agents anywhere in the crowd. And I believe that story came from Dallas Morning News. Now, way back in November of 2008, 9 months ago, also in the Telegraph of the UK, the Secret Service was blaming Sarah Palin about the death threats against Barack Obama. It says Sarah Palin's attacks on Obama's patriotism provoked a spike in death threats against the future president, Secret Service agents revealed during the final weeks of the campaign. And it goes on. I'm going to talk about this a little bit more when we come back. But I'm starting to get the feeling, as vertigo-inducing as it is, that, you know, the election of Barack Obama was a hoot and a holler for all of us who wanted to see some change, if not in U.S. policy, and at least in the color of our leader. And we've been given that little thrill ride, and it's like, okay, time to pull back on the chain. Kind of like, you know, the first Catholic that was elected, you know, the real good-looking Catholic guy back in 1960, you remember. Man. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. Welcome back. This is the Malloy Program. Kind of a weird night, but what the hell, it's Monday. So the Secret Service is saying they don't have enough people to protect the president. The field agents are saying we need some more protection. And the Home Office, isn't that Department of Homeland Security? Isn't that Janet Napolitano? Wasn't she selected by Barack Obama? What the hell is going on here? But the word is coming back. Well, you know, your Secret Service, it's like being in the Marines. Do with what you got. You don't need any more. Your U.S. Secret Service. Do with what you got. But meanwhile, the death threats, 30 a day. Good Lord. What is that? 10,000 a year? No, couldn't. Yeah. 10,000 death threats a year? It's astonishing. So I'm starting to come to the conclusion that the power, the force, the dark lords, the whatever you want to call them, want to see an end to this presidency because Barack Obama's not playing right. Even though he's playing by most of the corporate rules, apparently he's not playing the way he's supposed to play or something. I don't know. And about 8 months ago in the same newspaper, The Telegraph of the UK, the Secret Service warned the Obama family in October of last year that they'd seen a dramatic increase in number of threats against him thanks to Sarah Palin's attacks. Michelle Obama, who at the time was not the First Lady, but Michelle Obama was so upset that she turned to her friend and campaign advisor, Valerie Jarrett, and said, quote, "Why would they try to make people hate us?" End quote. Now, all this was in a Newsweek story and in the Telegraph of the UK, published back in November of last year. Details back then of a spike in threats to Obama came as a report last week by security and intelligence analysts Stratfor warned that he's a high-risk target for racist gunmen. It concluded, quote, two plots to assassinate Obama were broken up during the campaign season, and several more remain under investigation. We would expect federal authorities to uncover many more plots to attack the president that have been hatched by white supremacist ideologues, end quote. The advisors to McCain said that a lot of this was Palin's fault. Some of these advisors branded her as, quote, a diva, quote, and a whack job, end quote, and claimed she did not know which other countries in the North American free trade area. There's only two of them. And you know, all that stuff about, there's a bunch of stuff here. But Sarah Palin would be the perfect corporate religious right candidate. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Watch out. Man. It's getting screwy. Let's do some phone calls. Robert is in Minneapolis. Robert, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, Mike, long-time listener. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you info on Kenya and the bus assistance I just heard you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Kenya, but I'm an American citizen.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to get a green card for my mother. And when we went to apply for the green card, you asked for the birth certificate. It so happens that anybody born in Kenya before 12th December 1963, there's no birth certificate.
Right.
That has Kenyan government, because it was not a government.
Right.
It was territory of the British. We were under the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
We were under a governor. So what they do, they give you a letter from the office of the president stating that there's no birth certificate that exists before 1963, and with a seal from the government that you are, either you have a baptismal card or you have like a church elder says that you were born in Kenya. That's all you need. So there's not a birth certificate that exists for anybody.
Right.
Around us, and you are pretty right about that. So let them go around with it if they want to. They just make a fool of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows what we know. So.
Well, I appreciate that firsthand experience with that, Robert. Thank you. Your call's a little mushy, but I think we got what you said. Robert had applied for a green card for his mother and required birth certificate, but they don't issue birth certificates in Kenya prior to 1963. Michael in Roswell writes there are a bunch of things wrong with the so-called Kenya birth certificate. Someone else noticed that the certificate number is 47,044. Odd that, given that Obama was 47 years old when he became the 44th president. And the registrar's name, E.F. Lavender, just happens to be the same name as a common hand cleaner. Besides the form carrying the legend at the bottom, Coast Province, Republic of Kenya, and is dated 10 months before Kenya became a republic, there's another small problem. The purported hospital of his birth is in Mombasa. In 1961, Mombasa was not part of Kenya. It was in the state of Zanzibar. And Mombasa was ceded to Kenyan upon that country's independence in December 1963. Now, the quick way to take care of this problem is for the court to make a referral to the appropriate U.S. Attorney's Office for defrauding the court. The woman, apparently this was entered as some kind of in a court case. Is this by this crazy Orly Tates? Is she the one? The woman responsible, Michael writes, for this fraud has already filed several suits which have been dismissed. But introducing forged evidence as a part of her latest suit is indeed fraud. Yeah, it would make the flat birther's head explode, but so what? They're such dumb bastards. You know, this is the part that gets me. Anyone with any intelligence at all would not interrupt with garbage and a Nazi-like attitude a meeting, a town hall meeting on healthcare. They would ask questions. People should be asking questions. There are legitimate questions to ask about the Obama healthcare plan. Legitimate questions. But because the pharmaceutical industrial or medical industrial complex is so not wanting this to happen, even though some of these frauds have signed on to it or say they have, they've hired these people to go out and disrupt these meetings. On Oberman's program tonight, he went down a whole list of mostly Republicans, but not a few Democrats, who have taken hundreds of thousands of dollars, including Al Franken, from the medical industrial complex. Just tons of money, millions in total. And that industry now, the medical industrial complex, is calling the chits in, so to speak. And who knows how many of these thugs are on the payroll of Republican members of Congress or the industry itself to disrupt these meetings. But the asininity here, the incredible ignorance of people who would again work against their own interests in order to what? To satisfy their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Somebody sent me an email and said, on your flight to Seattle, read this new book that's out, the one about the family. And I first heard about the family, a lengthy article. It was either in the Harper's or in Mother Jones about Hillary Clinton's involvement with that fanatic religious right organization based in Washington, D.C. And it's gotten some publicity lately because so many of these people, these men who cheat on their wives, are members of the family, which makes sense when you think about it. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
You raise the blade. You make the change. You rearrange me till I'm sane. You lock the door. Someone in my head, but it's not me.
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, BuzzFlash.com has an interview up that you ought to take a look at with the author, Jeff Charlotte, of this book, The Family. Just a little excerpt here from BuzzFlash on July 9th and 10th on the Maddow Show. Some of you may have seen the author of The Family discussing the chilling political implications and the super Christian men theories of Republican senators and congressmen who believe they are above moral responsibility and the law because they have been chosen by God to lead the ignorant sheeple. Senator Ensign is an active member of the C Street family. Governor Sanford received solace from them. These are all adulterers. They specialize in pious allegorical excuses for sins of lust and greed. They are like the elitists who ruled in South America, killing and torturing in the name of God, granting themselves special graces because they could sin and be redeemed by Christ without end because they're chosen by God. And one of the two lame-brained senators from Oklahoma, Tom Coburn, is in hot water as a C Street family member for allegedly trying to assist Ensign to, in essence, pay off his mistress. And a lot of these skull and bones for Jesus types actually live together in the family home on C Street during session. In some ways, they are a non-Catholic version of the mysterious Opus Dei, which Antonin Scalia and other members of the Catholic hard right belong to. The family definitely believes in a sort of Straussian Christianity in which the religiously enlightened guide the masses to higher ground. It's really scary stuff. And then to find out, as I did recently reading an issue of The Nation, that Barack Obama is appointing these people to crazy religious people to his Office of National what's it called, Kathy? That it's the government money is funneled to religious foundations and they distribute it amongst these various organizations, and you'll find very few progressive liberation theology types on these committee or on this organization. What they are, for the most part, are religious right fanatics. I mean, really crazy people. The universe is 6,000 years old, and as Pat Buchanan said tonight on Chris Matthews' program, he wasn't descended from any salamander. And to me, of course, and if you're a regular listener to this program, you know my belief on religion, but there's a nexus here. There is this hyper sick, destructive Christianity linked to, hyper sick, destructive corporatism. And, I was reading something also about Walmart, an article I think also in The Nation. about how the Walmart, you know, coming out of Bentonville, Arkansas, even though the Walton family were not hyper-Christians, they were not these religious Armageddonists and Lake of Fire people, they understood that most of the people in the South, where they first began, were. So they based their corporate structure around that model. And as a result, you know, because a lot of people say, well, Jesus, you know, why do people keep going to Walmart if it's so bad? Well, in so many instances, before we hit this chaos of this economic volcano that George Bush gave us, prior to that, people were going to work at Walmart because they liked the Christian, the hyper-Christian kind of dominant attitude that was the corporate model. There have been instances in the past where Christianity unwound is a force of death, murder, mayhem, destruction, dark ages, chaos. In the lower ranks, while the upper ranks, the priesthood, keep thinking of Denis Diderot again and again and again, that man will never be free until the last priest is strangled with the entrails, or the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. But this alliance between the state and religion, this is, I think, one of the reasons the framers in this country, given all their faults, tried to make sure that the separation of church and state, I mean, they saw the European model. They saw, you know, a millennium of the European model of church and state being combined. Boy, if they would have been around long enough to see Hitler and the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church, that would have been a treat, wouldn't it have? So I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to my friendly neighborhood bookstore up the road and get a copy of The Family and read it. And maybe you'll want to, too. All right, we have a break coming here, so we will go ahead and do that. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls for the remainder of the program. The number here is 877-996-2556. Have you gotten your podcast subscription to The Malloy Show yet? You haven't? Go to MikeMalloy.com. All the info is there. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let's do some phone calls. Orion is calling from Portland. Hello.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm fine. How do you pronounce your name?
It's just like the constellation, Orion.
Orion, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Hey, I just wanted to start with just like a kind of a tiny little backstory. I was going to talk to you about the birthers, if I could.
Sure.
Well, I live in the Portland area, and anyone who's listening from Portland knows that it was about 108 degrees here last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it the normal temperature this time of year is 79, so it's 30 degrees warmer. And last year we had a snowstorm that gave us 5 feet of snow. We haven't seen that in 50 years. My point is that this is like these storms as a whole are just part of the evidence of global warming.
Uh-huh.
And it's just those kinds of things. You know, we see storms and we see things like these all the time and every day, but people refuse to believe it. And I'm just wondering, I just can't comprehend being, you know, a logical person that you can see something like Obama's birth certificate and you can see something and hear something like this guy from the hospital in Hawaii saying uh-huh. that he was born there over and over and over and over again. And just there's so many people out there who are just like, no, he didn't. And I'm just wondering, you know, how can I respond to something like that?
Well, you can't. There is no response. You know, ignorance is curable, but stupidity is terminal. And seriously, what we're dealing with in this country is a level of stupidity that I've not seen ever in my life, and it seems to be growing. And again, I hate to belabor the point, but it is definitely linked to this crazy Christianity movement, this one that insists on ignorance, that 6,000 years is the age of the universe, that there's no such thing as evolution, that women should not control their own bodies, the gay people should be at best sent off someplace and isolated, at worst maybe hanged. This is madness afoot in this country. True madness.
Absolutely, Mike. I actually went to school in a very, very small town of about 100 people. My graduating class only had 5 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a town like that in eastern Washington state that was just all kinds of, you know, evolution doesn't exist and the earth is only 6,000 years old. So it was very interesting growing up amongst that kind of a mentality. And I'm kind of glad that I did, because it gave me an idea of what it is truly like to think on a level that has absolutely no foundation or basis in logic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you and I talk about it all the time, and it's one thing to talk about it, it's totally another thing to witness it and be a part of it, whether willing or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So anyway, that's all I really wanted to say. Hey, one more thing before I go. Are you going to have another youth night anytime soon?
I hope so. At some point, maybe in another couple of weeks. It's a good idea, and we've been thinking about it. We just haven't done it for a while, as you know. But, yeah, I think we're going to do it again.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate what you do. You're a good voice of sanity, and I love listening to you every night. So you keep it real, man, and I'll talk to you later, okay? Well,
thanks, Orion. That's a very nice comment. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care. You know, it's happened before where religious fundamental craziness has just swept various sections of Western civilization. I'm not sure about other parts of the globe, other societies. I don't know if in the Far East they had. And you don't need to send me any links to enlighten me, because I've just got too many things to try to read. But the people of the book, the religions of the book, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and I hate to include Judaism almost, I really do, because they, you know, their Bible is more or less their history and their mythology, and the, you know, the Muslims and the Christians came along and said, oh, hey, we're going to build on that one. Yeah, we'll steal that. So you almost got to figure the Jews are sitting back going, why are you people grabbing our stuff and then building your fanatic religions on our stuff, whatever. But Christianity, there have been many times in our history, our being Western European and African history, where this religious craziness has swept through societies. There is a form of animist Christianity, I believe, now that is just erupting, eating alive some of the people in various African countries. I can't name the countries, but where people are accused of being witch doctors and making men's scrotums disappear. And people are being grabbed and murdered and killed. And it's part of Christianity, too. It's just the indigenous form of Christianity. When you think about the murder and slaughter and mayhem that went on in Central and South America, it's scary because I sometimes get the feeling that these people identify themselves as the muscular Christians, the rapture-ready crowd, They don't give a goddamn how many people they kill or how many people die, because to them, you know, their life is later. You know, all this consciousness stuff here is just a BS. It really doesn't matter. Or it's a testing ground, or it's run by Satan and demons and yada, yada, yada. You know how sick these bastards are. And given the fact that they are suicidal, they are cannibalistic in their religious beliefs, they don't, you know, there's no way that you can really stop them. A lot of people talk about the suicide bombers in Muslim faith. The entire Christian religion is suicidal. The whole thing is suicidal. It's based on a blood cult of suicidal madness. And so many of these people who seem to be telling each other and telling the rest of the world that the time is now for this perverted, sick, degenerate Christianity to start to manifest. And it is. And I just wonder if we're poised for another round of bloodletting by these crazy people who think that they are operating, you know, doing God's work through Christ their Lord, who they have completely turned into a devil, into a murderous, blood-drenched demon. And it's scary to me. I mean, it really is. Religion has always scared me because of the ironclad, unbreakable hold it can get on people's minds, just like any kind of mental illness. And because that's what I see religion as, is pure, definable, DSM-4 mental illness. And it's rampant. It's rampant. I don't know what it's like in Chicago or Minneapolis or L.A. or San Francisco or Portland or Seattle, but here in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, I can drive around and see just vehicle after vehicle after vehicle with these crazy Christian bumper stickers. Scary stuff. I mean, really scary stuff. And you pull up alongside these monsters at a red light and look at them, and I don't know. They're not really people. They can't be. They can't be. They can't be human beings. These have to be some kind of bird people or swamp people or Martians or something. And all of them, they're just drenched, soaked in blood and gore and death and destruction. And they want to bring it onto everybody because of this twisted belief that at some point, you know, the sky is going to open up and the angels are going to come and their Lord is going to come. Man, oh man. It's too scary for me. Y'all. John is in Los Angeles listening on KTLK. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, fellow seekers. I wanted to make three comments.
Okay, I may have to put you on hold for a second because we have a break coming, but go ahead.
Well, religion is one of the, is even an even older institution of social control than the media. I mean, you know, the monks and writing books before everybody made them, and the witch doctors operated in the villages before, and they didn't even have real media, I guess. But it's just a way to keep people ignorant and moved around the way the leaders want them to be.
Right.
And it is ignorance. I don't agree with you necessarily about defining people as stupid. I think that it's a kind of a pessimistic way of looking at it, because if they are defined more as ignorant, whether it's by the media or religion or a combination, whatever, they at least can... What did you say? Be redeemed?
Let me put you on hold a second, John, because I got to do a break here. No, I make a clear, bright distinction between ignorance and stupidity. Ignorance is curable. Stupidity is terminal. Stupid people, for the most part, choose to be stupid. There's some kind of comfort in it. There's comfort in not being able to see beyond the length of your own arm. And we can disagree on that one. But stupid to me is... not changeable, whereas ignorant can be.
Jesus land, where we all love thy neighbor, if thy neighbors understand. We won't let too many Mexicans across the Rio Grande. Welcome to Jesus land.
Our technical advisor has been Birch, our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Economics correspondent is Bruce Enberg. Ethical advisors, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and the engineer and producer of this program, Catherine Bay. All right, back to John in Los Angeles. Okay, go ahead, John.
Yeah, the other thing that I really needed to get off my chest was all this talk about birthers and less organized attacks on the president, Obama, reminds me of the snow job put on the American people by the Lewinsky event. It seems like it's happening again to make us think that the president is, distanced from his corporate bosses. And he's more he's more deserving of our defense and our sympathy, when in fact he's probably going to just capitulate and give in to what the corporate medical industrial complex he's talked about want out of the government, as well as what he gives in to the military industrial complex by keeping the war in Afghanistan going up and up and up.
Yeah, I wonder. So, I wonder if
it's been more like Bush all the time. Bush dark is what I thought when he first was inaugurated, and Bush dark is what he's become.
Bush dark.
In deference to his skin color.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks, John. I appreciate your comments. I think I don't think there has been a president since when. Since FDR, who has not been manipulated by or under the full control of the corporate establishment in all its various forms, whether it's the military corporatism or financial corporatism or medical corporatism or the manufacturing corporatism or transportation corporatism, whatever it's been. And I'm not talking about the workers there. You know what I'm talking about. I can't think of one since FDR. Can you? There was Truman and Eisenhower and Kennedy and Johnson and Nixon and Ford and Carter and Reagan and Bush 1 and Clinton and Bush 2 and now Obama. And it seems that every single one has been unable or unwilling or a combination of both to really stand up and resist. I think the closest anyone came to it in that long history since FDR might have been Jimmy Carter with his speech that the media labeled I forget the word that they used, but he never used the word. What Carter was trying to do was use his personal religiosity, and I think Carter would not have used the Bible as a weapon. Maybe he would have, but I don't think he would have. He was trying to use his religiosity to tell people, look, there, get your nose up out of the ground, raise your consciousness above butt level up to up a little bit higher, and. Of course, he was mocked and vilified, and still is, for making an attempt, as weak as it was. But I don't think there's been any president. If you disagree, send me an email. I can't think of any president who has made a successful effort to stand up against any of this. Marge is in Maryville, Indiana. I haven't heard from you for a while. How you doing?
Pretty good. Only a month late, but happy birthday.
I thought maybe you got arrested for robbing a bank or something. No? Oh, thanks for the. I got your card. Thanks for the card.
Did you read that column?
I read the card, and you know, Kathy wanted to see it, and I said, "No, you can't see this one."
Oh.
But yeah, no, it's a good card. I love your cards.
How about the column? Did you read that about starting out the day and then ending up with not doing anything?
Yes, I read that too.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So glad everybody's copacetic, and I missed Molly's birthday too.
Yeah, you did. We thought you might send cash or a big check, but yeah, it's all right.
Well, what, is she starting school yet?
Yeah, kindergarten in 3 weeks.
Oh mercy.
Uh huh. We went to Target to buy her some sneakers yesterday, and pink sneakers to go with her yellow pants, which matches her turquoise blue shirt. This kid loves to get slicked up, I'll tell you. But
matches?
Well,
pink, yellow, and turquoise?
In her mind.
Oh, okay.
Look, Daddy, isn't this pretty?
Okay, all right.
But it's hard to believe that, you know, we have a kid who's picking out her own color combinations now, but we do.
Well, you know, you raise her to be independent. What can I tell you?
That's true. That's very true. Well, we're about out of time, Marge. So.
Well, I was just going to...
No, I can give you a minute. Go ahead.
I was just going to tell you, you know, that the Republicans are liars and the Democrats are wet noodles.
Yeah?
And the media is a bunch of corporate whores.
Let me write all that down. Okay, got it.
And then you got Dick Armey that's running all the teabaggers.
Oh, is it Dick Armey?
Yes, sir. His loving self is going around organizing these people.
Yeah.
Same as he did with the Swift voters in 04.
I should know that, and probably somebody has sent me bukus of links about Dick Armey and the teabaggers, but I'll have to look it up now.
Oh, I'm telling you, what is it going to take to get the Democrats organized?
We have to elect you.
What was it, Will Rogers that said that I don't belong to
a real
an organized party?
Yeah.
I'm a Democrat.
I'm a Democrat, he did indeed. I miss him. No, I bet you do, though.
You ain't that old, kiddo.
No, but I bet you miss him, right?
Oh, I'm going to get you for
I
that.
Know you're going to. Hey, Marge, here's the music.
Take care.
All right, thanks for checking in.
Hey,
don't let a month go by. I get all these emails
if
from...
If I can get you on your phone, I will.
Well, all these emails, people say, where's Marge? So, you know, stay in touch. All right, dear heart. We'll see you all tomorrow. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Dad, are you...